This one's going to sting much more than others just because I think it was taken on. It was potentially, I don't know. It's hard for me. This is going to be hard for me to speak. I'm going to have to speak. I'll speak with you tomorrow. You're going to see what I mean when you see the winning goal. And my heart breaks for the players because we probably still should be playing. I'll be available tomorrow.
I'm not quite sure, you know, what he's thinking, why it shouldn't have counted. I mean, that kind of confuses me a little bit. You know, the puck hit the back of the net. End of story. So, not sure why you'd say that.
Ooh, got a little spicy last night. Colorado Avalanche. I think what Chris Cuthbert said was on the brink of the Stanley Cup. They're up 3-1. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bunka, Salish Forfar. Good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. So, according to many pockets of the internet, and according to John Cooper, the thing that he is referencing there as you were sleeping is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Avalanche players on the surface. Like, it was not looking good. It was not. I tried to do it. It didn't work out. I tried. Hey, give it a go. Too many men on the ice. Were there too many men on the ice for Nazem Kadri's goal? Brilliant goal. Got lots of Nazem Kadri thoughts. Ailish Forfar, should the Lightning still have been playing hockey last night?
Oh, this is a toughie. So I went.
You got to do it.
I know.
You're the player. This is up to you.
I think it was too many men. But I also think that in the moment, it's easy to look, if you're John Cooper, who loves to blame everybody else, every time that something doesn't go his way, it's the refs. You know, he loves to jump on that. I wasn't surprised that this was the angle he took, but after some deep diving and investigative journalism on Twitter.com, there's a lot of reasons to why this is an accurate feeling. First of all, the score sheet that the NHL handed out after the game, the official score summary.
No, I don't want what the NHL said. I want what
I'm
you think
you,
as a player.
Yes, I think it was too many men. And I'm also giving you some reasons why that helps me feel more comfortable in that statement. They had 7 people on the game sheet on the ice, including the goaltender. So 6 skaters. That goal sheet is used, like, it uses player tracking. And then they saw that this tweet got blown up. Thousands of retweets. And they changed it online. A little sketchy.
That's sketchy.
To me, looked like it was too many men, because when you're changing, you know, as a player, you hold on, you hold on, you hold on, and then you jump within a reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. McKinnon's still on the ice when Kadri scores the goal. Kadri gets the puck at the other side of the ice.
No. I thought he gets off by the time the puck's in the net.
Or he's hanging onto the boards. How about that? There's a video. I wish I could show it on the air. There's a video, a bench camera video, where you can see the team celebrating, and McKinnon is, like, not on the bench. So In all that time that Kadri has gotten the puck, shot down the wing, put it in the net, everyone didn't really know if it was a goal or not. McKinnon is still not in the Avalanche bench. To me, too many men. Also, there was a lot of weird calls last night.
Okay.
That's one of them.
I'm going to get to that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get to that.
But the score sheet thing, a little sketchy, no?
The score sheet thing is definitely sketchy. That's the league doing that and then having it tweeted. Here's my general rule. Even if you have bad tweets from, you know, leave them, like, you know, it's just, if once you delete the tweet, that's you, that's culpability. Like, you know how they used to tell you? There used to always be TV shows where they would always say, like, don't apologize if you create an accident. Don't if you do something wrong, don't apologize, or else people could sue you. You know, like they'll sue you if you
guilt, right?
It's culpability. That's what a deleted tweet is to me. It's that the league. If you delete a tweet, that means somebody went, oh, we don't like the look of that. We're admitting that doesn't look good. It's obviously too many men on the ice. Like, it's by the letter of the law, it's too many men on the ice.
I can read the actual rule as well if people are interested.
Hey, yes, sure. People, here's the thing, though. Yes, the letter of the law many times people can read it and these things get controversial. To me, I'm not upset about it. I don't feel like the wrong call was made. And maybe this is unfair, but there's a couple things. Mm-hmm. One, nobody said it in the moment. You know why? Because Nazem Kadri went 1-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
He went 1-on-3. What else was happening right before then? And this part shouldn't matter. Like, again, this part shouldn't matter. If it was a clear offsides, if it was something reviewable, if it was something like immediately in the, then whatever. Calls get missed all the time. I want to ask this to Anthony Stewart later today, mm-hmm. but this is kind of one of those things where I feel like maybe it isn't this aggressive. Maybe it's a second difference, a split second difference, whatever. But this definitely happens in hockey all the time where this call gets missed. And I think it's like, what would have been more aggressive or egregious? That the Colorado Avalanche, who were dominating that hockey game, got dinged on that too many men on the ice penalty in that moment? Or Nazem Kadri scoring a 1-on-3 goal against the defending Stanley Cup champions after they were dominating,
in an overtime where Lightning. Tampa had no business winning that game.
Tampa, listen,
no business in that overtime.
I had a tweet in the drafts going into overtime for them being like, that's the most memorable win of their run for me, if they win. Because I thought they blocked every single shot. They came out in the first period of Tampa Bay. They laid it all out there. But
so much so that they looked like they could barely skate in overtime.
They knew they needed to pad themselves a lead and get out and stake themselves to one. They did that. They got the one goal, but what? After the first period, 17-3, I think were the shots. It was something insane, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Oh my, I actually wrote down 17-4. So they got a goal 36 seconds into the game, and then they don't score again the entire rest of the period. I remember just being like, that's real trouble for them. Mm-hmm. That's a real problem because Colorado is just so dangerous. Either way, Tampa was the better team throughout most of the game. Problem is just like the attrition took its toll. They lose Cernak. Oof. Can't have it. All of a sudden, their blue line's just playing. They put up the numbers, and it's like Sergachev's played like 30 minutes heading into overtime all of a sudden. They're just way overexposed. All of their stars have just, you know, now they're no Braden Point is getting more noticeable. The injury to Paul is getting more noticeable when you're trying to see him take a stride
Hagel
on the penalty
can barely
kill.
Skate in overtime.
Kucherov.
Somebody got their arm chopped off.
Yeah, it just, they had too many. Cirelli is needing his teammates to help put the jersey on. Stamkos is blocking shots where he's trying not to show pain down the ice. Like, they were beat up. You're right. It's not that they were going to lose that hockey game. They couldn't get the puck down to the other end of the ice. Do they have a shot attempt in overtime?
I think at one point, as I was feeling the same way, at least I saw one stat come up on the scorebug where Colorado had 8 shots in overtime and Tampa only had 1 at that point. And that's when I was like, this game is like, this is, we're just waiting for this to end.
It totally was.
They had no pressure. They had no, like, they didn't even get the puck out of their zone. And when they did, they looked so tired. They were hobbling to the bench. So, yes, does it change the feeling about the game-winning goal being controversial? A bit, because it wasn't this back-and-forth dynamic overtime period. The rest of the game, though, if that would have happened with, what, a minute or two left in the third period, when I thought Tampa could have won this game and deserved to win it, I think I would have different feelings.
See, this is where I'm torn, because it's like, why it's so weird, the penalties that people pick and choose. Okay, so that's too many men, and it's like, okay, it's because it's not quote unquote, it's black
he's not
and white.
Fight, it's 5 feet from the bench.
No, but he's not 5 feet from the bench. But what was a worse missed call is all I would ask a Tampa fan today. When Nazem Kadri in the third period is cutting out into the front of the net, there's no one else in the universe around him. He's got a clear look at Vasilevsky. It's not a 1-on-3. He's curling out from back behind the net. And what happened? He gets tripped, like open ice, all the officials looking at it, right dead in the middle of the play, inside the hash marks.
And that was clearly a makeup call for a play earlier on.
Yes, Hedman get interfered with. My only point here is that we act as though some of these other penalties are not like black and white when they are. Mm-hmm. And officials miss calls. This one, just to me, if I'm going on like the pantheon of worst missed calls in sports that affected championships, like, it's just not there for me. This isn't Brett Hall with his skate in the crease where I'm going, okay, come on, like, it's right there. How are we not how did we miss this one? Like, you screwed over Dominic Hasek here. Like, that skate is in the crease, and that was the rule. My God, I'm so old. I think that was, like, 1996. I was a little kid. But either way, it's part of the play. Does he jump over the boards a split second too early? Absolutely. If I felt like there was a couple of even players that would have helped Kadri on the play, or Kadri is the guy that comes in and finishes a goal, right? Like, if it's the guys breaking into the zone,
he's
if
like
it's
the
Mikko
Rantanen,
if he's the trailer late and he just bangs home a rebound, I'm going, ooh, it was a spectacular play. It was a 1-on-3. It was after Andre Vasilevsky had made, what, 3 10 bell saves in overtime? I wanted to say, I don't have ways to describe the way Vasilevsky played other than swears, so I can't even... I have no words that come from my brain that explain the saves that man made in overtime. Some of the plays that he made in overtime. And it's why, even though I saw with my eyes that puck go in the net live, I went, did Vasilevsky wizard that goal out of the net? Like, I think the refs...
Same.
The reason why the refs took a second is that they were so surprised someone scored on Vasilevsky clean. They went, there's no way. There's no way that Nazem Kadri just scored on Vasilevsky with his one thumb, right? Mm-hmm. And the other refs looked around and went, no, totally. Like, let's find it. They're like, the puck's right there. It's in the net. And they're like, I don't know. How did it get there? When did it get there? Let's take our time. Yeah, let's take our time to really figure this out. So, again, yes, by the letter of the law, it was a missed call. But the refs had decided, Wes McCauley's crew decided in that third period that they were going to go, nope, we're not calling anything. You got to – I texted a couple buddies asking them during the game, like, what has to happen for this – for there to be a call in the third and in overtime? And we concluded something Chris Simon would do. You know, like, so Chris Simon – it's got to be a Chris Simon play. Like, you got to hack Ryan Holloway in the teeth in order to get something or step on somebody's leg with skate. Like, that was the only thing that was going to get called. So – I don't know. Do you not agree? Like, again, it's shady, but do you think that this changed the course of history is what I would say to people. Like, again, if you're a Tampa fan, you're going to believe. If you're John Cooper, you've won back-to-back Stanley Cups, championship DNA, you're going to believe that you're playing for a bounce. You want to elongate it. I get it. I lean to, did it impact the way that the game was going to play out?
I think it's going to, in my opinion, moving forward, feels to me that the series is over now. I felt...
Oh, yeah.
When the third period started, I guess it was still tied, I said, you know what? Next team that scores is going to win the Stanley Cup. Because if Tampa were to win or score...
Oh, you thought if Tampa scored, they were going to win, though.
I think if Tampa scored and tied the series up, they would win the Cup. And I think, obviously, if Colorado goes ahead, I feel very confident a 3-1, the way that Tampa was bunch of skeletons at the end of that game with absolutely nothing left to give. That seemed to be their biggest punch. You had the best Vasilevsky game that we've seen. He held that team in there for 4 periods. I just don't know what else they can give. They looked so tired. They're going back to Colorado with that entire, you know, altitude issue that we talked about before. Like, they got absolutely pummeled in that arena in games 1 and 2. So do I feel confident that this series is going to be extended? Not really. Like, I just, as soon as that game winning goal happened and all the conversation afterwards, my confidence meter in Tampa is probably the lowest it's been in 3 years.
See, I felt like, you know, between the periods, Elliot said that if this felt like the series. Mm-hmm. And I agreed with that from the Colorado standpoint. I thought, hey, yeah, if Colorado wins this, it's over. The series is done. Again, Tampa laid it all on the line. They needed to win every single game at home. We always do the, hey, a series doesn't start until the team loses at home. And this one, it definitely felt that way. But, I have a tough time. There's zero scenarios to me in which Tampa Bay wins 3 in a row here. Like, Tampa wins 3-0, and it's... I'm not going to say it's more shocking than LeBron in 2016, where the Warriors lose or drop the 3-1 lead and the Draymond suspension happens and the Cavs come back and win. But it goes into that tier of holy crap. even though they are former champions, whatever. It just they would be insane. Again, they're just so beat up. Mm-hmm. Tampa just they're playing with all guts right now. They're outmanned, they're outgunned, they're beat up, but their stars just tried to find that other level last night, and I think that was the game where they threw everything at the wall and it didn't stick. And now you got to travel to Colorado, and I just don't know.
I wrote this in our doc during the second period before everything changed. I said the grit that Tampa has is what's going to propel them to a Stanley Cup. And then one period later, I went back to say the grit that Tampa has is not enough. They're beat up. They look like they don't have anything left to give. And it's funny how that shifted so quickly when the way that they're laying their body on the line, the give it all, put it all out there, just wasn't enough. And I think that was, for me, the change in period three to overtime where it had just, we said it, like that was their biggest punch. They came up short. I just don't know what else is left to give.
Yeah, I give them all the credit in the world, the way that they played that hockey game.
Prove me wrong, though. I'd love to see it go to seven, but at this point, I'm not.
No, I don't think it's happening. I think this series is going to be over tomorrow night. So Friday, we're going to be setting up this game. We're going to be setting it up, but I think that.
I'd love for a team to win on home ice too. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, it's cool.
First time since like 2001, you get to hoist the cup in front of your rowdy Colorado fans.
It's been that long since that's happened.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I was like, what? No, it's like, that can't be possible.
No, that would be crazy.
Yeah, I was like, first time since 2001. Yes, cursed. They've won. But yes, since they've won. I was like, okay, yes.
One other thing in the text line here that is along the same lines. How my name is Dave. On the Tampa first goal, when the goalie lost his mask, the play should have been called dead and not allowed the goal. Part of the same kind of conversation. That one was actually debunked that apparently
if you want to go letter by the law
same kind of thing with the letter by the law. If the goalie's mask comes off in the middle of a scoring play where the team has possession, they don't blow the whistle. Obviously looks awful, the goalie has no mask on and you're putting the puck in the net, but that's another thing that's written in the rule book, so maybe these are things that they'll reevaluate when the season's
that's
over.
That's a good call. Okay, like we don't need more reevaluation. The game needs less evaluation with some of this stuff. Like we already, again, people keep going with different standards of the way that they evaluate plays because of our ability to freeze frame, go back in time and look at it through the lens of replay. And we never do it for like, oh, that's a horrible hook, when that's actually a worse thing sometimes. Oh, that's a really late hit. Wow, that guy got hit from behind.
Yeah, but this guy's helmet was off. No freeze frames needed for that.
I know. What I'm saying is about the goal that gets scored in overtime where we go, like, we're okay with trying to re-legislate the black and white plays for whatever reason, even though a lot of the other plays are black and white. You grab somebody's stick, that's a penalty. You know what I mean? You bump the goaltender, that's a penalty. They miss calls all the time. And in that particular game, they missed 100 of them. The mask one, though, is no offense. It's stupid. It's I get that the optics of it look bad in the moment where you go, oh, my God, he could have been hurt. Blah, blah, blah. No. That's a good goal. The rule is that. Mm-hmm. I knew that in the moment. The goal happens, it gets reviewed, the broadcast explains it, everybody explains that it's a good goal. You shouldn't be conspiracy theorying this one at 6:18 the following day. Like, you've been handed everything at this point. Like, now you're just doing, like, hockey QAnon, you know? Like, this makes no sense. You're lost. Anyway, so Kadri scores the goal. Let's move off past the controversy. How'd you feel about Kadri in the moment?
I have nothing but good. No, I'm over the complication. I love Kadri. I don't care about the trade anymore. I've moved on. I've let those, bygones be bygones.
Sure.
I don't want to live in the past anymore. I want to feel good for this guy. I don't want to think about how it affects the Leafs, which is very difficult when he comes back. And this was the other thing.
That's necessarily it, but anyways, go on.
So he got announced in the lineup yesterday, and I'm like, boom, betting apps opening. No one would let me bet on him to score. I knew he was going to score. Overtime comes, I'm like, Kadri's getting the OT winner. Like, there's just no doubt about it. Boom. It's just like, it's the way it's written. He's had such a prolific Stanley Cup final. You even put that in there, 7 game-winning goals in the playoffs? That's outrageous. I just feel so much respect for this guy right now.
I can't even believe that's a real stat, that he's got 7 game-winning goals with Colorado Avalanche since he's joined them there. So I tweeted this, but I was really pulling for Tampa Bay in that game because, one, I wanted the series to go longer and whatever, but I was less rooting for them to win based on the overtime because they just started to get hammered so badly, and I went, this is just Colorado's time. They're the healthier team, and they're the deeper team right now, and they're not getting horrific goaltending. Like, it's not coming back to bite them in the ass. They're the better team. I think that this has been pretty conclusive now through the four games, that they're better. But I didn't, as soon as Nazem Kadri scored that goal, I went, well, that's the one thing that I would have wanted more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And not from like a vindictive standpoint, because yes, I think everybody's happy for Nazem Kadri. Like, I don't think that there are too many people from this city that bear ill will towards Kadri. I think that, again, looking back at it, he did get suspended a couple of times in the postseason. And even when he got suspended last year, people went like, oh, see, this is why you do it. But I don't believe in the toxic positivity of just be happy for Nazem Kadri. Just be happy for Nazem Kadri. Like, the way you're looking at it is fine. I think that the people that are like, don't even bring up that it's like a Leafs thing. It's like, no, it's going to be a thing. This is what happens in sports, is when you make a bad trade and it continues to get worse and worse and worse over time, people mm-hmm. bring it up. And that's why, for me, the feeling is a little complicated. I am thrilled for Kadri. Like, again, he's one of my favorite guys in the NHL. Like, one of my favorite players. I think that this is the thing. He's like Lenny with the rabbits. It's like he cares too much. That's why he gets hurt.
Bring that up, and I don't know what you're talking about every time.
Okay. Well, every time. I mean, I can't remember a single time I've ever made that reference before. But anyways, it's like
these guys' names all kind of end up being one thing to me.
Yeah. So it's a mice and men. You can Google it during. Yeah. Again, your Ivy League education. Yeah. Really. Like,
I didn't study mice and men.
I don't know what you studied. Okay. Like, I'm still waiting to
maps,
find out. Like,
remember?
Wow, what did you study? Like, yeah, I go?
Maps.
Oh, wow, she's really educated.
Huge
like,
map girl.
So yeah, maps, topography. that's so. I'm thrilled for Kadri. I think Toronto really loves the guy. I think that he cares so much about the game, and he's such a gamer that he has had a problem dialing that back at times. He's accountable for his past actions. Absolutely he is. But I'd rather always have a guy that cares too much than a guy who cares too little. I still believe that the Maple Leafs at that junction, like, if you say they shouldn't have traded him, I go, well, what did you say at the time? And I'm someone who said, like, hey, I'm on the record with this over and over again. I thought the Leafs had to move on, but they made a bad trade. That doesn't change things, right? And also, Kadri did get suspended last year. Did Colorado go, we need to now panic trade this guy and get him out of town? No, they stuck by him. They kept him. And guess what? Now he's scoring game-winning goals for them. It wasn't black and white. They didn't have to trade this guy. And if they did trade him, like, everyone always talks about this. This is when you make, what have we been doing with the Blue Jays for the last, like, 2 weeks, right? Hey, how desperate should they be for relief pitching? And what do a lot of people say? They go, well, you can't be too desperate because then you make bad trades. And that's how I feel about the Kadri thing, is when the offer becomes a year of Tyson Barrie and Alex Kerfoot, and that's the only available option to you, you go, yeah, we'll keep him. We'll walk into the season with him. Hey, does anyone else want to top this offer for a centerman who's making this kind of coin and who can score these kind of goals, who can make these kind of plays, who has these kind of mitts, who cares this much about the game? No? Fine. Then we'll stand pat. And I can't help but look at it because there's so many complicated layers to the Kadri story with the way that it rippled effect in through the Leafs. How they would have had their, like, they don't get any depth scoring. Think back to the postseason this year. Who scored goals for the Leafs? The Stars. Mm-hmm. Who scored goals from the depth? They got 3 goals from their depth scorers in that first round. And not like Kadri's like a depth guy traditionally, but they got 3 goals. 2 of them were empty netters from Mikheyev. They got, that's it, from their bottom 6. That was the Leafs' contributions. So, yeah, the way that they're built, the John Tavares signing, and how Kadri, like, now at this point of his career, you want to debate between who you'd rather have between those two players. If you want to include the cap number over the last couple of seasons, it's not a debate. It's not a question. And one of those guys was the C in Toronto. Like, they've been criticized for having guys who didn't care too much, and there's Kadri doing his thing. So, yeah, I'm sorry. It's just, It's a tough one. It is a really, really tough thing to look at. And it also is one of those things, by the way, that you have to wonder if, given Toronto's cap structure, if they ever have done these things where they've evaluated what they need to do in a trade. If it has made Kyle Dubas a little too shy to make a deal that involves a guy like William Nylander, because he goes, well, I can't have another Kadri trade. You know, like, you only have so many of those where you can't lose it anymore. You can't even lose it by a little bit. Anyway, there's tons of stuff. I think it is complicated. And I don't blame Leaf fans who think about the trade anymore. Like, if you're the way that you are, which is like, no, I just think about Nazem Kadri in that moment and what it means for him, I agree. But I care about the Leafs. And so I see everything through the lens of the Leafs. And when it's Nazem Kadri, I go, yeah, man, that's awesome. But I sure wish you would have been doing it here. And like, yeah, do you own some of that fault? Absolutely. But boy, there's nobody here right now in Toronto where I'm going, well, yeah, but the Leafs got Alex Kerfoot and the taking penalties 200 feet from his own net, high sticking the world's tallest man in the face. And like, it's just, it's not. Yeah, it's never going to be over. I'm sorry. It's never. You don't just close the book like that in sports. That's not the way that these things operate. Okay, so we both agreed that the series is over. Yes, congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche. You can play this if they end up losing the series and Tampa wins, and it's all awesome. But we'll be kind of rooting for that anyways, minus, again, the fact that Kadri wouldn't get his Stanley Cup ring. We'll talk more about this at 7 o'clock with our buddy Anthony Stewart. But two quick things, rapid fire. I want to get these done within the next 10 minutes. Number one, it's draft night. It's one of the best nights of the year in the NBA. If you're a fan of rumors, trades, BSing, Woj accounts, you know, Woj versus Shams, who's going to win? Blake Murphy, will he get one over Shams? Like, will it end up happening? There's a Chris Haynes article that's floating around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the Portland Trailblazers being interested in OG Anunoby and trying to get him for the 7th pick in this year's NBA draft. Again, Chris is just reporting what he's heard. He's one of the most credible guys. I just think that this is a weird report again, because it's like J.D. Bunkus report wants more money. You know,
add me to that one.
Yeah, at J.D. Bunkus reportedly looking for more money from Fan 590. At J.D. Bunkus, but looking for more vacation days. Like, what are we doing here? A lot of teams would like OG Anunoby for the value of a 7th. Overall pick in a draft where there's clearly 3 top guys. There's a 4th guy in Jaden Ivey that everyone kind of consensus believes that could be a star player. Then beyond that, I have yet to see one credible draft coverage person say that between picks 5 and beyond, there is like a future superstar in this draft. There's going to be a lot of good players that come out of this draft. I think this is going to be an unbelievably interesting draft in terms of like, there's going to be someone that could get picked at 23 tonight, much like where OG Anunoby was picked, or Pascal Siakam at 27, and we look back at this one retroactively and go, oopsies, this guy should have been all the way up to 5 or 4 mm-hmm. or 3. I think that it's one of those drafts. But the idea that Toronto would trade a wing player of OG Anunoby's caliber for a lottery ticket 7th overall pick that doesn't even have the upside that they need makes no sense. I don't know what part of it makes sense. Okay, so I kind of wanted to try to run down the case, okay? The case would be, okay, well, OG Anunoby's not happy in his role. That smoke is real, and he does not want to be a Toronto Raptor anymore. He feels as though if he goes to Portland, that what? He's going to play more.
Or he's going to be more relied on.
But I don't even see that happen. This is my point. It's like, number one is, well, Damian Lillard is the guy in Portland. Mm-hmm. To an even greater degree than Pascal Siakam is the man in Toronto. And Scottie Barnes is still a bit of a ways away. Like, he's going to have more of time building in the offense. But I don't think that this is a scenario yet where this is like unequivocally Scottie Barnes' team. Maybe that's the way the organization is going. But if we're talking about shot share, they just traded for Jeremy Grant, who is someone who wanted out of his last situation because he felt like he wasn't getting enough. So you're still the number 3 guy there behind Grant and Dame. Like, does that really solve your problem? And you got to live in Portland, like, which is not a place that's better than living in Toronto. I can promise you that. So I don't get it from that standpoint. Okay, well, here's the other angle, JD, is that going into this season, OG only has 2 years left on his deal. Is it, okay, yeah, he has 2 years left on his deal before a player option, which he'll probably decline at his age 27 season. But they just got two more seasons of OG Anunoby at $18 million. Like, there's no urgency for the Raptors here to do this. Again, if OG Anunoby tries to force their hand and says, I'm not playing for you, that's the only way that you start entertaining OG Anunoby trades for anything other than a superstar. And again, that is the other report by other people. Kevin O'Connor has said this, that the Raptors are only entertaining trades for OG Anunoby when it comes to a superstar-level player. That's what they will do, which makes sense, which should be the thing, right? If you want OG, it's for a star. It's not for a seventh overall pick. The Raptors, there's a case to be made for pushing the timeline back a little bit, making a deal, but this is not the one. This is not the trade. Lastly, as to why I don't think it's going to happen, other than the fact that, again, there's a discrepancy in value, it doesn't make sense from the Toronto Raptors standpoint. OG still has a lot of player control. We just saw an NBA championship where Andrew Wiggins was the second best player on a championship-winning team. OG's never going to handle the rock like Wiggins. He's never going to score like Wiggins when Wiggins gets hot. But he's a better shooter. And could you not see OG Anunoby playing the role of this guy shuts down Jason Tatum in a playoff series and makes it hard for him to score? Could you not see him crashing the boards and getting 12 rebounds the way that Andrew Wiggins did in that postseason that made him so invaluable? Could you not see him knocking down a bunch of open three-point shots as someone else creates around the basket? Like, I don't think that there's a gap between OG Anunoby and Andrew Wiggins that exists where you go, oh yeah, like you could never see OG have a series like what Wiggins just did. And that's full credit to Wiggins. He was a first overall pick. He showed his pedigree. He was phenomenal in that series. But, like, we just saw how a trade like that can murder you. So I am not for trading OG Anunoby. I am certainly not for trading OG Anunoby for the seventh overall pick in a draft from the Portland Trailblazers in a historically frowned upon draft beyond four. And if you're a Raptors fan, I wouldn't be overly concerned about it if and when the Blazers pick rolls over.
The only Wiggins thing I would say on that is he looked so great in a new setting and with a new role and less on his shoulders. And if that's something you think that maybe OG goes somewhere else and gets a new perspective and then blossoms into the Andrew Wiggins type player, there's a little bit of room for that argument. But I would rather see him find that growth in a team that already has him and values him and puts a lot of effort into creating their players' growth in their team.
But here's the problem with that argument is that, yeah, it's a, okay, change of scenario or change of scenery, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be good for a player. Yeah, but Portland is not Golden State. You don't go from,
yes,
you know, it's not a basketball factory where guys improve their basketball IQ or have to have high basketball IQ to hang around the floor. Like, this isn't an education in basketball. You know where OG Anunoby plays? He plays for a team that actually does have a championship culture, that does have remnants, including OG Anunoby, of a core that won an NBA championship, that has, like, here's what Toronto has better than Portland. Better city. Better basketball culture, more history of recent success, like better team, better coach, better general manager, more at their disposal when it comes to facility and resources, a better depth. Like, I don't know where Portland, you could say Damian Lillard is better than Pascal Siakam, but I don't even agree with that. Like, I wouldn't, this is a hot take, but people will be upset by this, but like where Damian Lillard is in his age and he's 31 years old. He's coming off a major injury and he's never won anything. Pascal Siakam is a wing player who can play defense, who can play make, who can rebound, who can handle the ball. I don't think that it's he just made all NBA. Like, I don't think it's all that controversial to say that you'd rather have Pascal Siakam than Damian Lillard over the next three seasons. Like, if Portland picked up the phone and made that offer, I'm not sure that Toronto would say unequivocally yes, yes, a million times yes. Just saying. They're both paid same. They're both max guys. I just think there's a case. I'm not saying every scenario. Would I rather have Damian Lillard trying to close out or on a different team, on a particular team? Maybe. But I don't even think that that's an ironclad thing where they have unequivocally the best player anymore. Like, not in this version of the NBA. So, just a thought, but I don't think it's completely unreasonable. Not better career, but yeah, better in this very moment. Would you rather have 27-year-old or 28-year-old Pascal Siakam or 31-year-old Damian Lillard coming off of an injury? I don't know. I don't think it's just like a black and white knock them down, yes, absolutely thing anymore. So yeah, NBA draft tonight. I hope the Raptors do something this offseason, but they're in a really weird spot, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. We have Michael Grange, we have Blake Murphy, plenty of Raptors stuff today. Let's take a break. What's on the A-list today?
Well, be careful with your English vocabulary, because the most common word in the English language. The most common word in the English language is not up for grabs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say is mispronounced and that you were doing a bit.
A word that we have used probably hundreds of times since 6 a.m. is not up for grabs as freely now. That's next. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Baby Friday. We did it.
We did it. Listen, I love me a good Baby Friday, but I need Friday.
We're one step closer.
Friday Senior.
Friday Senior would be Saturday, wouldn't it?
Friday Senior is, yeah, it would. Well, no, because Friday, the original name is the Senior. Baby Friday is Junior. Mm. So it's just, yeah, no. If it's Friday, like Senior Friday is, that's the OG Friday. No. It's a different name. Different, right. Saturday is a Saturday, all right?
We're really good with words on this show. As I said, the most common word in the English language, which is what, in your opinion? I said, what's the most common word in the English language, JD?
And? But?
Nope. The.
I don't want to guess the, right, yeah.
That's what's up first on the A-list.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Most commonly used word, it's tough to get that off your tongue, is the. Now trademarked by the Ohio State University. They have successfully trademarked the word the after they've been trying to do so since 2019. Initially, they put up this trademark request, was rejected because Mark Jacobs wanted to trademark the same word. And then the trademark office also thought that Ohio State's request to be trademarking the word the was just for show. They had to go through this entire process to prove that there was meaning behind why they wanted to trademark the word the. They were successfully approved to own that word under class 25, which means the school can use the on clothing, namely t-shirts, baseball caps and hats, all of it being promoted, distributed and sold through the school in the field of sports and college athletics. It only consists, the trademark, of standard characters without claim to any particular font, style, or color. So the word the now belongs to the Ohio State University. I used to play against people that went to the Ohio State University, and I hated so much when they would say the Ohio State University. If you just mentioned, we're going to Ohio State, we're playing my friend went to Ohio State, they would specifically stop you to make sure you said the Ohio State University. So now they own it.
Well,
pretentious.
Yeah. I don't really have any thoughts on this other than, yeah, they want to be able to market those shirts. And I think that's cool and it makes sense for them. It's not like you're going to go around and you're going to say, so the game last night and someone from Ohio State,
they own it.
For a trademark for a t-shirt that they want to make money on, this makes sense. They're trying to, it's a cash grab. They're trying to go out and get money. And this is one that I think is synonymous. Like, it's the U. But it's the Ohio State University. And yeah, if you bet, I think that's kind of a, I don't even think that's a lame shirt, actually, now that I think about it. Like, if you get a shirt that's in those colors and it says the,
they're already up there. I'll get you one for your birthday.
Well, I'm just saying that it's kind of like people know what it's for and people know what it is. So this one makes sense to me. And of course, that's the most common word.
Yeah, you thought it was and but.
Yeah, as well as just like. Yeah,
I thought A would, like, just the letter A. Words. Like,
yeah.
A. Like the A list, you know? Guess we're not there yet. We're working
is
our way
A
up.
A word?
Like the letter A?
I know,
like
but it's, I know, but it's just like, yeah, A. So I'm like, yeah.
A is a word.
Word or, so it's like a word count, not a letter? I don't know. It's just, it's tough. It's a tough one.
Okay, yeah, A has to be a word.
All right. What's next?
It is. I just looked it up. Okay. Lewis Hamilton. Couple things on Lewis Hamilton here. The story has two parts. So, yeah, he's obviously been talking a lot about his injuries, and he has now stated that he needs painkillers to cope with microconcussions. And, quote, I have microconcussions. It's definitely been happening a lot more with headaches in the past couple of months. I have not seen a specialist about it, and I have not taken it too seriously. I have just taken painkillers. That's part one of the story. Then, as we know, he was revealing that he had some health concerns with his back, with all the bumps that the car, which he's very unhappy about, he's facing. Mm-hmm. Max Verstappen, this is when they're up at the podium, actually at the Canadian Grand Prix. He goes, a lot of sports out there, you damage your body. Once you retire, you won't be like you were when you were 20. Football players have problems with their knees, all sorts of injuries, and whether in your motocross or F1, you're going to break some bones and be injured. So that's Max Verstappen accusing him of being overdramatic. Okay, that's part one of the story. It's obviously been something he's been very public about this season. Mm-hmm. Formula One legend Jackie Stewart has now come out to urge Hamilton to retire after his horrible start to his season. He's gone 10 straight races without a win. He's sixth in the driver's standings, 9 races in, which would be the worst result of his 16-season career. Stewart goes, it's time for him, not Anthony Stewart, it's time for him to resign. He's got music, he's got culture, he loves clothing, and the rag trade for him would absolutely be suitable. I'm sure he'll be very successful because he's earning a huge amount of money, rightfully so, because he's been the best of his time. But nevertheless, it's wiser to stop than go all through the pain of not being able to do what you did before. He's carried the sport well. I'd like to see him resigning now. I feel like I'm at a crossroads with this, obviously, because he's been a legendary figure and he is still competitive. But this season has been very difficult to watch, and he's been very loudly complaining about the vehicle to the point where Toto is like, this guy's disillusioned with what's going on. So the entire conversation around what Lewis Hamilton should or shouldn't do, I think, is going to be an ongoing one. But with those pieces of information that I provided, where do you fall?
Okay, I don't like to comment on people's injuries.
Okay, I agree. That aside.
Hold on. Yeah, but I just in general, I don't like trying to judge how much pain mm-hmm. someone is in. And I go, who knows how real this is for Lewis? I don't doubt that, you know, my close personal friend, Daniel Ricciardo, said like, hey, Lewis's injuries, his back stuff is very, very real. Mm-hmm. But I'm also a believer of if you step in the car, if you step on the ice, you tie up your cleats. I don't really want to hear about the injury all the time. This was kind of, you know, this is a running thing with athletes. It's like, okay, are you playing? Like, so you're playing. Okay, cool. Like, then you get to be judged on your performance. Like, you get to gut it out? Great. But ultimately, like, you're still judged on your performance. And I'm sorry, but Lewis also does have like a huge track record of being a complainer. Mm-hmm. And that has like worked out well for this guy because he's one of the most competitive, best drivers who's ever lived, right? Oh God, the F1 guys are so mad right now. They're so mad that the casual is giving a hard F1 take here. But
they already stopped listening to the show after I ripped on the Grand Prix.
The guy has a history of being a complainer. And we know he loves to complain, and we know he loves to make excuses. And so, yeah, he's probably hurt. He's probably dealing with these things. I don't really love the... If I got to take umbrage with anything that he's done here, it's that, like, I do not believe in... It's like, you should be very clear when you talk about using painkillers to suppress an injury, especially one that's a head injury, Lewis.
And like, again, I'm sure there's more comp... As he said, hasn't taken any further steps to see a specialist about.
This is the more, like, I'm not trying to be like a big snowflake here and be all sensitive about this, but like, yeah, I don't really love the idea that Lewis Hamilton would take a public statement of like, I am just using painkillers to mask over something and not looking for medical attention. It's like, yeah, you're not a role model. It's the Charles Barkley thing. Like, if you're listening to Lewis Hamilton for medical advice, you're stupid, but there's a lot of stupid people out there. And I just think that it's a tough message to send. I am more with Max Verstappen here, where I go, yeah, dude, like, that's what this is about. Like, you're stepping into a race car over and over and over again, and you're not going to come out of this, I'm guessing, unscathed. I don't know, like, who was it again that you said told him that he should retire?
Jackie Stewart.
Okay, yeah, Jackie Stewart. That's a big name. And it's like, Jackie Stewart saying retire, I think, is like a little bit of... Again, I don't know what the... I just will say that it seems a little bit like, hey, stop complaining then. You know? Like, hey, if you're gonna keep doing this, like, retire then. You've had a good run. You don't need to do this. It's really tough that the first year Lewis doesn't have arguably the best car, and it seems pretty inarguable at this point that he's like, and concussions, and
George Russell driving the same car 34 points ahead.
That's the case, though, that I think Lewis is hurt. Well, like, that's the case.
That's
where
the
I
case
go,
that he's hurt, or he's just not performing because the cars are the
same
car.
Hurt. No, okay. I know. That's where I go hurt, because I think that Lewis Hamilton has proven that, like,
he's
given
a better driver.
Yeah, that he's a better driver than George Russell is, like, throughout his career. But maybe he has taken a slip back, and maybe he has just, he's not the same performer, and he is using, like, it's a fair point to raise. I'm just saying that, to me, this is probably a lot of these elements have kernels of truth, right? It's not one thing or the other. It's not like Lewis Hamilton is faking everything. No, he's probably dealing with stuff, and he's probably dealing with some severe stuff, and it also coincides with the car not being great. And it also is he's not someone who's going to deal with his injuries quietly. He's not someone who's ever going to be like, at the end of this year's races, he's going to go and then address it through a surgery or say, you know, I had concussions all year. He's going to be loud and vocal about it every single race. Every single time he's going to be doing it, shows up in Montreal. Oh, we're not sure if Lewis is going to be here. Oh, he'd never miss it for the world. Okay, again, like, how many times are we supposed to, like, talk about it? And how much of this is just trying to control a narrative where you're going, the entire season is still about me, because it would be, I'm doing better if I'm healthy. Like, would Lewis be winning or be in the mix for the Drivers' Championship if he was healthy this year? Like, no. No, he would not be. So,
all of this is being talked about right now also because the next race is the British Grand Prix, which is obviously...
No, but it's been talked about.
No, but no, this, I mean, like, this, the Jackie Stewart thing is coming up because, hey, the guy's also British and he has this legacy. It'd be interesting. That's another week away, though. So maybe there's more that comes out about this, but it's tough. I'm glad that he raced while I was there. But
yeah,
clearly.
Of course. And you saw him get to be on a podium.
Yeah,
and
that was cool.
You saw it through your little fence hole.
I saw it through the little mesh fence hole that I ripped, or the tree that my friend had climbed.
By the way, I will say this about, and we didn't discuss this, you and I, but I had a lot of people reach out about how bad the experience was in Montreal, and that made me sad. And I'm talking about people who even, like, paid for grandstand seats and who dropped big-time cake, that it was just that the thing that kept coming back to me over and over and over again was they oversold the event. That they really oversold the event.
Massively.
And, yeah, like you mentioned to us on the show, I was sad, like, because you went on a – you know, you started the show with, like, 15 minutes of crushing the Grand Prix and being like, this was the experience, before it was like, yeah, it was cool to be on the track at the end. You know, like, it was not –
That was the honest
– I know, it was
the
honest.
And I did get a lot of people messaging me as well. Like, I felt a little bit nervous about saying – hey, these are the things that were wrong with the race I went to. But at the same time, I'm not going to lie. And I did have probably five or six people that said, I was there too, or I have been many times, and that's exactly the experience I had. So,
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, maybe it's don't tough. Spend thousands of dollars to go, especially if you have to walk around the racetrack. Yeah, if you are going to spend the thousands, then you've been warned by the Fame Warning Show right. on Eilers Four Farm.
Well, I would love to go again. I just know what I would do differently.
Would love to go again.
I will go next year, and I will try to give it one shot of redemption.
I got to tell you, you really spooked me, and so did a couple of my like close friends that went, because I get really frustrated with like crazy lines and poor infrastructure and
well, maybe like, don't go.
No, I know. Like, so I'd be, and if it was really hot, you know, or if it rained or like the weather wasn't perfect, I'd be letting out some complaints. I'd be Lewis Hamilton. I'd be the Lewis Hamilton of our group. Let's take a break. Let's come back. How routine or how frequently does that missed call happen in hockey? We'll ask Anthony Stewart next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailer, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.